biggest discussion and debate on the internet this week is about the assassination murder of UnitedHealth CEO Brian Thompson in downtown Manhattan. Today, I'll be discussing a lot of symbolism and synchromysticism surrounding this event that the mainstream news will definitely not go near. These topics are dangerous because we live in a dangerous world. So let me be your guide as we do a comprehensive breakdown on the conspiracy theories of the CEO shooter on occult symbolism and pop culture. On today's supporters only bonus episode for the month of December, we're going to discuss the December 4th shooting of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson in Manhattan. We're going to catch up on the timeline. I'll discuss the theories about it being a great-looking assassin, secret coded messages on the bullets, books that expose the insurance industry, connections to Catcher in the Rye, my latest obsession, hackers, insider trading, Bitcoin's clearance of $100,000, Jay-Z, symbolism of blue, Rockefeller Center, UnitedHealthcare's Freemasonic symbolism, Jack Parsons, Frederick Nietzsche, Cliff High's 39-day prophecy after Joe Rogan and Donald Trump's interview, and a theory about UnitedHealthcare's lobbying with a spark of possible capitalist revolution. Today's episode is pretty wild. Don't miss out. If you're on the supporter feed already, thank you very much. I love you dearly. If you're a free feed loser, now's your time to shine. Step up. Step up into one of the three. I got three. You know where to go. You know what to do. People always say, well, which one should I do? Whichever one you like the most. I don't know. Patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. That's the one I would say you get the most bang for your buck. Everyone likes it. Comment section's on fire. All that stuff. Which, by the way, I had a post for the people on my Patreon. I had a post I made about how to create a sort of project I want to do about like kind of like that poster back there. I'm working on it. Give me a year. I don't know. I'm talking to a person about it. More to come. All right. You know me. I move slow, methodically, sure-footedly. So, also I need another quick, if you're on the supporter feeds, you'll notice I dropped three Twin Peaks episodes. All right. The next episode I'm going to drop, hopefully, I think, is going to be a Twin Peaks adjacent episode. We're going to talk about Kenneth Grant and his book Outside the Circles of Time. All right. That's going to be on the free feed and everything for everybody because it's very important. It's a book from an occultist who describes how the Trinity atomic bomb test tore the veil open, and that's what gave us all kinds of stuff. The Roswell crash, the invention of AI, all kinds of things. It's very important to the big scheme of the big picture of what we're talking about. The end of the world and the digital matrix. So be sure to listen to that. Don't be like, oh, another stupid Twin Peaks episode. That's not what it is. Kind of. It's relevant if you're into Twin Peaks. And if you're not, I don't know why you're not into Twin Peaks. That's fine. I get a lot of hate comments every time I post these shows. Quit talking about Twin Peaks. I get it. All right. We're going to blast through these next month. In January, February, it's done. We'll have completed 55 episodes on the greatest series of all time. Okay. That's my housekeeping. All right. What happened? Well, according to CNN, Brian Thompson, the CEO of UnitedHealthcare, who was fatally shot in Midtown Manhattan on Wednesday in what New York police called a brazen targeted attack, was a longtime leader in corporate America, a model student and star high school athlete, and he had been caught up in a high-profile insider trading lawsuit this year. Thompson, 50, lived in Minnesota and was visiting New York for UnitedHealthcare's annual investors conference before he was killed. First, a little LOL at a star high school athlete. How did that make the cut? Who cares? Anyway, so there's a timeline. Let's rock through this timeline that is provided on the Wikipedia with a reference. And it's got a variety of reference: New York Times, Washington Post, whatever. November 24th, which is, what is that, six? That's 11 days ago, or 11 days prior to the shooting. Suspect arrives in New York City on an interstate bus from somewhere south of the city and checks into the HI New York City hostel. Now, I think today, you know, because I'm recording this on December 6th, early in the morning, way too early for me. And I think they're saying that he came from Atlanta. Anyway, 5 days later, November 29th, suspect checks out of the hostel. The next day, he checks back into the hostel. And then there's nothing from November 30th to December 4th. I don't know what he was doing. But at 5 a.m., around 5 a.m., December 4th, suspect seen at the Frederick Douglass House's housing development. Then about an hour, 15 minutes later, 6:15, he's seen leaving the 57th Street F train subway stop. 6:17 a.m., suspect buys coffee, water, and granola bars at a Starbucks two blocks away from the New York Hilton Midtown Hotel, discarding the coffee cup and the water bottle. I've read that they got a fingerprint lifted from that water bottle, but it was smudged. So it's not, I don't know. But can they get DNA off of it? I imagine. What kind of sloppy assassin is this? 6:39 a.m. Suspect arrives in front of the New York Hilton Midtown Hotel and waits several minutes. 6:40 a.m. Thompson leaves the Marriott Hotel he stayed at the prior night, heading towards the New York Hilton Midtown Hotel. 6:44. Thompson walks across the street towards the Hilton, and the assailant shoots Thompson multiple times, clearing malfunctions from the pistol. The suspect immediately flees northbound into a pedestrian walkway. 6:46, police respond to a 911 call. 6:48, officers arrive on scene and find Thompson with multiple gunshot wounds to his back and leg. He's taken to the hospital. So that's a 4-minute reaction. That's pretty good. Shout out to the NYPD. Yeah, he says he got shot at 6:44 and the police arrived at 6:48. Assailant is seen traveling northward on an e-bike towards Central Park. That's going to be relevant when I talk about Catcher in the Rye, folks. Which, stay subscribed to my show. I'm going to do a breakdown of Catcher in the Rye. I read the book, it blew my mind. And it's going to be a two-parter, I think. Coming soon. 6:59 a.m., a person appearing to be the suspect seen riding a bike on West 85th. 7:12, Thompson declared dead at Mount Sinai. 8 a.m., United Healthcare investor meeting begins. They kept going with the meeting. Oh. 9 a.m., United Health Group CEO Andrew Witty cancels the investor meeting. That's Sir Andrew Witty to you. They started the meeting anyway, apparently. And I see a lot of criticism online. People are like, oh, the typical capitalist bullshit. The guy gets shot, murdered, and slaughtered, and they're still having the meeting. It's like, well, I mean, I don't know. What do you want them to do? Yeah, you know, I don't know. Like I get the crudeness of proceeding with the meeting. I mean, they did cancel it eventually, but I mean, you got all these people that flew in from wherever. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's like asking, what's the saying when you ask Mrs. Lincoln how the play was or whatever? It's kind of one of those deals. Now, listen, it was an investors conference, meaning Brian Thompson was going to be reporting on the value of the company, meaning if the shareholder stock value of this company went up, everyone was going to be happy. But what does that mean? That means that if the value of the company went up, that this company was very profitable. And to be profitable in the world of insurance, and I'm sure everyone understands this, that means they have to deny a lot of claims. The more claims they deny, the more profit they can receive, the happier these people at the investors' meeting were going to be. And for them to deny claims, that means people are being denied healthcare coverage that they need. We live in a wild country. Okay. United Health is also the largest insurance company in America. I had never heard of them. But they're the largest one. If you look at their revenue And if you go to their Yahoo Financials income statements, you can look at last year's monies. They showed $360 billion in revenue. Now, that's just revenue. That just means that's everything coming in. That doesn't include their operating expenses, reducing out of that. If you reduce out all their operating expenses, you're looking at $86 billion in gross profit. And that's still not covering all the expenses. From what I understand, I'm not a financial expert. But after they pay the operating expenses, they now have a $28 billion operating income, which I believe is the profit. Don't quote me on that. I don't know if that's pre-payroll. I don't know. We're talking about a lot of money, though. I mean, that's an obscene amount of money. And if you go through their Wikipedia page, there's a whole slew of lawsuits against them for frauding the government, overbilling on Medicare claims, lawsuits about them denying claims for people that needed the health care. It's a mess, let me tell you. I'm going to read you from it. It says, in July 2024, the Wall Street Journal concluded that United Health was the worst offender among private insurers who made dubious diagnoses in their clients in order to trigger large payments from the government's Medicare Advantage program. The patients often did not receive any treatment for those insurer-added diagnoses. The report, based on the Medicare data obtained from the federal government under a research agreement, calculated the diagnoses added by United Health for diseases patients had never been treated for had yielded $8.7 billion in payments to the company in 2021, over half of its net income of $17 billion for that year. That's pretty bad. Okay, so yeah, it says there in 21 they had a net income of $17 billion, and I'm looking at 2023 on Yahoo Financials, it looks like $28 billion. So I think it's in the ballpark, and if that's true, like Brian Thompson was in for a nice little bonus, don't you think? Now, Brian Thompson's wife had said there had been threats. In fact, the same day of the CEO's shooting, someone made a bomb threat on the home. Turned out to be a hoax. And they're trying to find this killer. New York police offering up $10,000. $10,000. And they released a photo of what appears to be a flirty Jake Gyllenhaal trying to tell us that that's the killer. Even though his jacket looks different, but hey, what do I know? I mean, it's hard to tell. The assassin images are kind of grainy. I don't know. They got the they had the calculators mounted outside the Hilton for surveillance cameras, apparently. Isn't that crazy? I don't believe it. I don't believe a lot of things. But, you know, I got security cameras, and like the resolution on those is way better than the Hilton in Manhattan has. That doesn't make any sense. But it's interesting how this story. Oh, and another gripe. I see all over the place, they're like, this is a graphic video clip of him slaughtering the CEO. And I'm like, all right, let's see it. And they always cut short. And I'm like, well, I don't need to see. I don't want to be crude. I want to be crude, but I don't want to be crude. Like, I don't need to see all the gory details, but I want to see exactly what we're talking about. You know what I mean? And I really don't watch. I don't like those kinds of videos. Like, they stay in my brain too much, but I wanted to see exactly, like, what the sequence was of him shooting and then having jams in the gun. Like, I don't understand. Anyway, interesting how the story captured the whole internet. The whole last internet is interested in this story. Almost like on some levels, they want us to see this. All right. And the video, the one that always cuts short, albeit very grainy, perfect angle. And that's why I'm going to come back to this in the conclusion when I discuss my theories about a capitalist revolution, trying to spark one at least. I think if you want to look at it through a pre-planned ritualistic element, maybe that supports it, right? And what I'm trying to say is, like, it is an absurd amount of interest in this case. Now, sure, is it interesting? Yeah, sure. I mean, you've got the CEO of America's largest insurer, and it's in Manhattan, and there's surveillance footage. So, I mean, there's a lot of elements there that make it of course, relevant. But for perspective, there was also a school shooting that morning of two kindergarten boys slaughtered in their classroom. Innocent children. In fact, there were 78 school shootings this year because I looked it up. 78. Nobody cares, though. Nobody cares. Sorry, kids. Billionaires carry much more interest and weight in this country. All right. Okay, shut the hell up, Granola Isaac. Let's talk conspiracy theories. Here we go. the assassination theory. Oh, I've seen videos from eyewitnesses who said that the dude was posted up all night outside the Hilton. That's not what the official story is, but I've seen the videos of two different eyewitnesses saying that. Right? But the official timeline says like he showed up just a few minutes before, which the timing is pretty uncanny if this was a planned out assassination. But the dude was, you know, full mask, hood, silencers. And the detective said he acted like an experienced marksman, the way he was kind of clearing his jam, from what I'm told. I don't know. Can't see the video. A bounty hunter with U.S. Marshals said he thinks it was an amateur by how he actually had the gun jam, which doesn't make sense to me because I'm like, well, a gun can jam. The fact that he's able to clear it and keep like unloading, I mean, that's, I mean, I feel like an amateur if it's jammed, be like, oh, crap, run and run away or something. The CNN said, at one point in the video, the gun seemingly jams and the shooter quickly resolves the malfunction and continues to fire before fleeing. The method of attack, posture of the shooter, and his ability to quickly resolve the gun's malfunction depict a skilled marksman. Members of law enforcement and the military, for example, routinely practice so-called immediate action drills, tests to see how quickly an officer in a simulated gunfight can clear a weapon of malfunction and then rapidly get the firearm back on target and ready to fire. Another strange part about the assassination theory is that he dropped a phone and a water bottle. Like I said, he went to Starbucks to get a little granola bar or whatever. And there was a video showing that he was on his phone before the shooting, which to me adds weight to the assassination conspiracy. I'm assuming it was a burner phone and he wasn't, I don't know, calling his wife to tell her he's picking up some bacon on the way home. So, and then I keep thinking about the him showing up to New York so many days prior. It's just odd. It's an odd story. Then we got the secret messages. Oh boy, this one's a doozy. There were some words found on the scene. It's like a movie, like a CSI movie. Like Twin Peaks, under the fingernails, there's letters, you know? On a full live round, there was the word delay, and on a expanded cartridge case, there was the word depose. Now, what does all this mean? It connects into the world of books, and you could argue this connects into, like, theories of John Carpenter's Mouth of Madness, which is about words in a book manifesting in real life. You could argue it's like Stephen King wrote a short story very similar. And I'm going to argue that it's similar to Catcher in the Rye. So let's get into this. let's see here. So CNN says police are combing through surveillance video and examining clues the gunman may have left while fleeing the scene of the shooting. The words delay and depose were found on a live round and shell casing tied to the shooter who killed Brian Thompson on Wednesday. ABC News earlier reported on three words found on the bullet casings. Law enforcement sources told CNN depose was written on a shell casing from a round that was fired at the victim. Delay was written on a live round that was ejected when the shooter appeared to be clearing a jam. Police are exploring whether the words found indicate a motive, pointing to a popular phrase in the insurance industry, delay, deny, defend. And if you look around online as of this recording, I've seen claims that the words delay, deny, defend, depose were all written. And it raises questions. How many rounds did he fire? They say that he shot him in the back once. So there's one. Then he like clears a jam a couple times or once or twice. I don't know. So there's at least one, we'll say. There's two. And then he proceeds to shoot him, I don't know how many more times, three, four times? So how many rounds did he have loaded? How many of them had words on them? Why does he have words on them? So what's the meaning? Well, one theory is that, just like it says, the insurance claim phrase. And if you go to the year 2010, there was a book by Jay Feinman called Delay, Deny, and Defend. On Amazon, the paperbacks were sold out, I want to point out. It says in the description, why insurance companies don't pay claims and what you can do about it. An expose of insurance injustice and a plan for consumers and lawmakers to fight back. The denial of valid insurance claims is not occasional or accidental or the fault of a few bad employees. It's the result of an increasing and systematic focus on maximizing profits by major companies such as Allstate and State Farm. Citing dozens of stories of victims who were unfairly denied payment, the book explains how people can be more careful when shopping for policies and what to do when pursuing a disputed claim. It also lays out a plan for the legal reforms needed to prevent future abuses. Now, the bullets say, they don't say delay, deny, defend. It apparently says depose instead of defend. So I don't know if it's like on purpose, right? An iteration of that original message, or maybe that is the message, and they're saying that this is the final stage to depose, which is to overthrow, is what that means. Again, we'll talk about the idea of a revolution being sparked in the conclusion. Now, what's interesting is that Dona, I did a live stream with Dona and Paranoid American, which go check out his Kickstarter. He's got an Illuminati comic. I got my copy secured, and they told me on the live stream on the YouTube that I will now get an Illuminati nickname. We all get little Illuminati nicknames. So go support that. Go to Donuts and Paranoid American's Kickstarter. Now notice the bullets. They have these messages on them, and the messages on the bullets are probably a reference to this book. Now, granted, it's very different from Catcher in the Rye, which is a fictional tale. But Donut, we talked about this on his show that day that this shooting happened on December 4th on his YouTube. And I told him, I was like, you know what? When you have these murderers and these assassin-type killings, a few times they've had a copy of Catcher in the Rye, and it's motivated murders, right? And I was like, wouldn't that be interesting if Catcher in the Rye was found on this guy somehow? And Donut messaged me when this news came out about the secret coded messages on the bullets. He was like, dude, like, it is from a book. And he's right. We have a similar reference. But now, what was interesting to me, and I talked about this on Donut's live stream, the Catcher in the Rye book. I think that that book describes it's about Holden Caulfield, right? It's this guy who's disillusioned with society. Reads very much like an incel. Reads very much like a psychopath that wants to kill everybody. And he's in New York City. It's a whole thing. I think there's a lot of MK Ultra program to kill messaging going on in that book. But in the book, Holden constantly references these ducks and wondering what happens in the winter when the pond freezes over to these ducks. And he talks about these ducks at the lagoon of Central Park South in this one part of the book. And that lagoon that he's referring to is a actual pond, and it's right off of 6th Ave, which is where this shooting happened, right? The shooting happened right outside the Manhattan Midtown Hilton. And what's interesting is that... let me see. I didn't get my sources here. Let me hang on. Hold on now. I got a thing. BigAppleSecrets.com. They explain where the lagoon is. He says in the Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield asked, "You know those ducks in that lagoon right near Central Park South, that little lake? By any chance, do you happen to know where they go, the ducks, when it gets frozen over?" He talks to a cabbie, I believe. And it says, that little lake is located several hundred feet from Grand Army Plaza and Fifth Ave. The pond is one of the Central Park's seven natural water bodies. It's hard to believe that this setting, almost of Central Park, is completely man-made. Yada, yada, yada. Okay? So it is interesting that the hotel was within a couple blocks. And then listen to this. CNN says... Oh man, I got my notes all screwed up. I think earlier I talked about how they saw him flee from the scene going northbound. He was headed towards that lake because he was, like I said, he was only a couple blocks from it. Is it a tight connection? Not really. It's a little loose, but it's a connection nonetheless. Very interesting to me because I'm knees deep in the Catcher in the Rye right now. Also, CNN posted, okay, we already talked about the wording on the things, but what's interesting is that I think we talked about this on a previous show. I'm not sure. I talk a lot, but it's interesting to me that the insurance companies, they all pulled out of Florida, right? I don't know if you've seen that. There's a whole crisis down there where the people can't get coverage for their home because a lot of insurance companies pulled out in this year. And I thought, wasn't that interesting that we got some of the biggest storms? Shoot, the one that hit Tampa was a once-in-a-100-year storm. Like, how did the insurance companies know that was going to happen? You know what I mean? They knew, I guess. Or just the dumbest luck ever. And I'm going to do a show about controlling the weather because I know that's a big topic. I've talked about HARP in the past. I got a massive amount of information. I just got to find time to sit down and record it. Probably a two-parter. Let's talk about United Healthcare as a company. Let's talk about how naughty they are. They had a, like most companies, they've got an AI algorithm bot, and they let this AI decide what coverage to include for people that were filing claims. And it denied like 90% of claims. And it was denying coverage to elderly people. It had a bunch of racist stuff going on. And again, it makes sense that this is why United Healthcare is profitable, because to deny healthcare claims is to increase profits. Then they had claims of insider trading. It says Brian Thompson in May of 24 was sued for alleged fraud and illegal insider trading. The Hollywood Firefighters Pension Fund filed a lawsuit against United Health Group CEO Andrew Witty, executive chairman Stephen Helmsley and Thompson, alleging the executives schemed to inflate the company's stock by failing to disclose a U.S. Justice Department antitrust investigation into the company. United Health Group in 2021 announced it would buy Change Healthcare because this big company just keeps absorbing smaller competitors, you know what I mean? The Justice Department sued to break up the deal, but a judge ultimately allowed it to go through. The Wall Street Journal in February 2024, reported the Department of Justice reopened the case even after the merger went through to investigate whether the companies properly set up a so-called firewall to prevent customer information from flowing between the divisions of the merged company. The lawsuit claimed that Thompson knew about the investigation as early as October of 23, sold 31% of his company shares, making a $15 million profit 11 days before the Wall Street Journal publicized the probe. The journal report sent United Health stocks sinking 5%. The revelation of the alleged insider trading led Democratic Senators Elizabeth Warren and Ed Markey to write a letter to the Securities and Exchange Commission calling on Chairman Gary Gensler to investigate United Health for the executives' stock sales. The senators noted that Thompson faced up to $5 million in penalties and 20 years of prison time if convicted. The reports regarding these trades reveal a disturbing fact pattern, the senators wrote. The timing of these trades raises numerous questions. The lawsuit, which remains active, was seeking a jury trial and unspecified damages from United Health and the executives named in the suit, including Brian Thompson. Now, I'm going to quick note, Elizabeth Warren was the one who created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It's sort of a watchdog over the capitalist corporations and things like that. Predatory practices, excessively high interest rates, those kinds of things. It's why I believe that some credit card statements and bills now have to break out stuff in a way that makes sense. But it's also the first part of the government that Elon Musk and Project 2025 want to get rid of. Why do you think that is? Why do you think billionaires don't like this? And we'll come back to this sort of quasi-political angle in the conclusion. But my point is that Thompson was under investigation and was facing up to 20 years in prison. Does that have a role here? If you are with United Health, maybe you're what's that guy's name? The big group CEO, Sir Andrew Witty, the knighted Sir. Maybe you're like, I don't want this kind of publicity. I don't want this guy making the headlines of going to prison for 20 years. Let's just take care of this. Maybe. I mean, when you're talking about this level of money and power and wealth, I mean, I don't think anything's off the table. I really don't. Then we've got some ransomware from hackers. One of the subsidiaries of United Health was that group Change that I just talked about. They were, when they tried to acquire Change, and that's why the DOJ opened up an investigation. This monopoly stuff bit them in the arse. Says the consolidation of Change, United, and Optum created this consolidation of mission critical services. And ultimately, that created a consolidation of risks that the entire sector was exposed to. From the National Advisor for Cybersecurity. Now, there's an article from April 24, if you want to nerd out on what happened. They got hacked with some ransomware, and they lost about $1 billion from these hackers. And here's where the conspiracy part comes in. I see they faced resistance from the government to monopolize and buy up all these companies, but they proceeded anyway. And then hackers get these guys all screwed up, like they didn't like this or something. I don't know. And this is where it gets weird, right? I don't know who the hackers would be affiliated with. But apparently this was like public information of some kind, right? It's on the internet. So maybe you're a hacker looking for sort of vigilante justice, and they're like, man, these capitalist corporations are getting out of hand. So they hack them. So I don't know. Maybe old boy that pulled the trigger was a hacker. Vigilante justice. I don't know. Now, on a more pop culture angle, to lighten up the mood, the location where this murder happened, it's murder, was near Rockefeller Center, which, as you know, has the big golden Prometheus torch-bearing statue. The Rockefeller, one of the prominent bloodlines. I'm going to tell you about another bloodline that's more prominent than the Rockefellers here in a minute. But anyways, this location of the murder was near, within a couple blocks of Rockefeller Center. And that same night, December 4th, there was the iconic lighting ceremony, because this is where all the movies show all the people ice skating, right? At the lighting ceremony, the Backstreet Boys were going to play or something like that, and Flavor Flav was there, and he got kicked out. How you going to kick Flavor Flav out? Anyways, this happened on December 4th. The murder, the lighting ceremony, and guess what else is on December 4th? Jay-Z's birthday. Jay-Z, known for making or creating Rockefeller Records with Damon Dash. And of course, massive rabbit hole with Jay-Z. I talked about him in detail in Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic, which I'll read to you right now. I talked about conspiracy theories about Blue Ivy, their kid. Another idea is that Ivy is a play on the Roman numeral, IV, which is 4. The number 4 is symbolic for both Jay-Z and Beyonce, since he was born on December 4th. She was born on September 4th. They were married on April 4th, and they have IV tattooed on their ring fingers. And something else I want to pull up here. Look at the logo for United Healthcare. It is blue. It's a big blue U. And I'll come back to some Freemasonic stuff as well. Well, the color blue is also discussed in Sacrifice and Magic Behind the Mic with Jay-Z. Jay-Z also has a fascination with the color blue, given that he had the album series named The Blueprint, a song called Blue Magic about drugs, another song called Jay-Z Blue about his daughter, and he trademarked a color called Jay-Z Blue that was intended to get painted onto a line of Jeep Commanders. Weeks after Blue Ivy was born, they tried to trademark the name Blue Ivy, but were denied by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. To tie things back into the more legitimate esoteric aspects, I posit that the color blue holds significance for Jay-Z because the blue chakra point, known as the energy wheel Vishuddha, is located in the throat and is known for the ability to verbalize. I don't know many other people that can verbalize quite like Jay-Z, who has the ability to express truth through the spoken word, a trait of the blue chakra. Now, to go back to the, and what's the connection there? It's just synchromysticism, just some strange sort of stuff out in the ethereal that manifests into reality. Now, that logo of United Healthcare, if you look at it, it appears to have three steps. You can look at it, be the judge of this. It appears to me like there's three steps. And if that's true, there's three steps with the initiation of Freemasonry into the Blue Lodge. That's what they call it. This is not the same as the Scottish Rite with the 33. This is kind of the overall general that you have to get through the three steps of the Blue Lodge to then focus on whichever flavor you want. And that third degree of the initiate is the Master Mason, which, by the way, is what Joe Atwill, his theory about Catcher in the Rye is about an initiation of Holden Caldwell into the third degree of Freemasonry. Now, why is it blue? Why is it called the Blue Lodge? Well, Albert Mackey's dictionary says, it's been explained as emblematic of universal friendship and benevolence, instructing us that in the mind of a Mason, those virtues should be as extensive as the blue arch of heaven itself. And the Masons wear blue on their aprons, so it's supposed to represent the heavens or the dome. But another oddity is that the UHC headquarters is found in Minnetonka, Minnesota. Now, when I look at that, I look at the two M's, right? MM. MM as in Master Mason. Or Marshall Mathers. or the other Marshall Mathers from the OTO. Minnetonka is also home to Cargill, which is America's largest privately owned company. So you've got America's largest insurance company and largest privately owned company in the same town. And just for fun, I'm going to read you a little dig on Cargill. As a private company, Cargill is not required to release the same amount of information as a publicly traded company, and as a business practice, keeps a relatively low profile. In 2019, the NGO Mighty Earth released a 56-page report on Cargill. Mighty Earth chair and former U.S. Congressman Henry Waxman called Cargill, quote, the worst company in the world because it's exploiting deforestation, pollution, climate change, all this stuff, right? It also details how they've been trafficking kids for slave labor, whatever, right? And the company is private, so the wealth in the Cargill family in its entirety or for the company isn't known, but there's 14 billionaires in this family. 14 billionaires in the Cargill family. That's more individual billionaires in one family than any other bloodline. So them Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, they might not have nothing on the Cargills. Okay, we're almost done. A couple more conspiracy theories. The city bike. On the donut live stream, he noticed that the first bank robbery in America in New York City happened at the Citibank in March of 1833. And the alleged culprits were Edward Smith and Edward Jones. Donut pointed out these were actually the names of the agents in the Matrix films. I looked it up. Turns out those were the aliases. anyways, in the live stream, I brought up how Jack Parsons used that number 8-3 as well. He signed his name Bellarion 8 equals 3, which means he crossed the abyss. And we talked about the movie Murder by Numbers, which uses the 3 and the 8 on the poster. Now, that movie is loosely based on a murder from 1924 by Leopold and Loeb, two American students who were trying to demonstrate their intellect by committing the perfect crime. They murdered like a 14-year-old boy. It was crazy. They get life sentences. Leopold got paroled in 1958. Loeb got shanked in 1936. Not so smart now, is ya? Anyway, what's interesting is that when you dig into that Wikipedia, Leopold was interested in Nietzsche's concept of a Superman, the Übermensch. It says, interpreting them as transcendent individuals possessing extraordinary and unusual capabilities whose superior intellects allow them to rise above the laws and roles that bound as unimportant average populace. Blah, blah, blah. Leopold believed it was possible that he and Loeb could become such individuals. And he thought that they were above the rules, above the law, which sounds a lot like the master class of elites. They think they are above the law. They think they are better than us, which adds resentment and, you know, possibly murder. It's murder. So that takes us to Bitcoin. On December 4th, the same day, mind you, Bitcoin cleared $100,000, which leads us to recap a conversation we had about Cliff High. Do you remember that? It was the Mike Tyson, Jake Paul episode. And, you know, and the reason I bring that up is because Cliff High was he's talked about crypto a lot over the years. And I mentioned him in my 2018, back in January 2018, I think a two-parter on describing what cryptocurrencies were and what Bitcoin was, because back then it was all pretty new stuff, right? Relatively to the normies, such as myself. And for fun, guess what? Bitcoin closed out in 2018. The low amount that Bitcoin closed out was $3,000 that year. So if you got rich from listening to me talk about Bitcoin, you're very welcome. I didn't have enough disposable income back then to invest. You know, I had a couple racks in there, but not enough to retire off of. I still got it, so, you know. But, man, can you imagine? $3,000, $3,000. If I go back in time to 2018, be like, just find $3,000 and buy a dang Bitcoin. Anyway, Cliff High, he was instrumental in me understanding. I read several books on cryptos. I really had a good working knowledge of it. Funny enough, the one book I read is this massive book about cryptos, and they talk about meme stocks, and I'll never forget. They talk about Dogecoin, and I was like laughing because they were making a joke out of it. They were like, you know, some jerk-offs just make silly stuff like the Dogecoin, and, you know, today it's, you know, 40 cents a coin or something crazy. Anyhow. Let me recap what we talked about with the Mike Tyson, Jake Paul thing so I can bring it back to where we're at. Cliff High made this software in the 90s to predict the future using different temporal markers, predictive linguistics, and so on. And in 2009, this software predicted a battle in the skies, UFOs, the military, all this crazy stuff, and how non-human intelligence was going to become a part of our life. And the software said this is going to happen 39 days after a particular temporal marker, and that temporal marker was Joe Rogan interviewing Donald Trump. But this was before this even seemed like something that would ever happen. Even if it was, like, it's insignificant. Like, oh, yeah, the guy from Apprentice and the guy from Fear Factor? Who cares, you know? So anyway, that, of course, obviously happened on October 26th. Some people told me it was actually October 25th, but when I pull up the podcast on my Apple, it says October 26th. So I don't know what the software intended. Was it the day it was recorded or the day it was released? Nonetheless, 39 days after that temporal marker of Trump and Rogan, we were supposed to have this massive inflection point, which lines up to either December 3rd or December 4th. Depending on however you want to look at it. So, let's see here. Boo, 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 boo. I don't know if you want to hear what I'm saying about this. I'm talking about the 2009 prediction. Because back then, oh yeah, because Bitcoin had just started to roll out at this point in 2009. Anyway, yeah, there's a whole bunch of notes I got that don't really pertain. So he talked about the 39-day event. He said that we'll see this contention devolve into a melee, which is a term used in a military battle where all the weapons are exhausted and you're down to like hand-to-hand combat type stuff. So did that happen? December 3rd or December 4th, was there a melee? Was there a alien cataclysmic event in the sky? Not really. Not really. But was there a melee battle? I mean, I don't know. If you call an assassin maybe getting paid in Bitcoin, knocking down some CEOs, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that event that he predicted was actually Bitcoin crossing the $100,000 barrier. Maybe it was a combination of the two. It was a crazy day. December 4th was a crazy day. So, I mean, according to my math, I said it was going to be December 4th, but everyone else is telling me I don't know what I'm talking about, and they say it's December 3rd. So, hey, choose your reality, as I always say. Then there's another strange oddity in this whole thing. There is a... We're going to talk about this here. Well, we're going to talk about it. Let's go to the conclusion, because I think this fits better into the conclusion. We're going to talk about a another billionaire that got killed last week. But let me get to that, because I got a sort of comprehensive theory I want to build up and just explain. In conclusion, first off, should we mourn this loss as a society? Because you'll see social media opinions, and of course, everyone's a tough guy in the comment section. You know what I mean? The internet turns out to be a pretty gross place where people literally say whatever they want. Sometimes they're trolling. Sometimes they're just trying to get a rise out of people. It's not the real face that we show humanity and society. Okay? It's like the grossest side of humanity. But should we mourn this loss? Because like on the one hand, to sort of side with the internet trolls, he was a capitalist pig, you know, making profits for this company by denying people health care. People that are dying from stuff, they're like, how can we not pay? How can we make sure they don't get the health care they need? Which is evil, I think. So if you want to talk about deaths, like how many deaths has United Healthcare been responsible for? A lot more than one. I know that much. This is very reminiscent to the, remember the submarine going down to see the Titanic and those billionaires getting imploded and turned into pink mist? That's kind of what it was. You know, you ever see those stickers that say send more down in this sub? I think they're funny. You know, it's not funny to laugh at people's death, though. It's 'cause I don't like the karma that brings, but inside the inner troll in me thinks it's funny. It's just like people die every day. Like, I don't know. Some greedy asshole gets fucking blasted. I don't give a shit. But on the other hand, putting on my Christian warrior cap, you know, we shouldn't be cheering the slaughter of human beings. I mean, he was playing by the rules. So if you're mad, be mad at capitalism. Don't hate the player. Hate the game. You know? This guy was still, you know, he's still a father, still a husband, had kids, I guess. I don't know. So, like, that's sad. That's sad. And I feel bad for the family who's sitting here watching the whole world say, F you and F your dead husband, basically. It's tough. But then I think about the system as a whole from a systems engineering perspective, and I think if you made a society where people didn't feel like they were up against the wall and can't afford groceries and can't afford rent and they're scared for their future, maybe you wouldn't have violence like this. Tupac said it best. I always mention this. There's an interview he did with, I don't know who, MTV, and he talks about this. He talks about how, you know, with gangster rap music, which was in the scope in the 90s, right? Pun intended. Rap was in the scope. And he said, look, it's like, man, if we're singing a song about how hungry we are and you guys don't want to let us eat, next thing I'm knocking on the door and I'm getting a little louder. I want some food. And then next thing you know, I'm kicking down the door and I'm like talking about blasting you and stuff. So I believe in that. I do think that this is a closed system and there's cause and effects, you know. And I'm certainly not a fan of the healthcare system in this country. I could rant about this for days, about how terrible our for-profit healthcare system is. And people are like, oh, good, RFK's in there. And politically speaking, I just don't think he's going to get anything done, because I think the powers that be will make sure that the lobbyists and the corporations and big pharma will continue dropping big coin, you know what I mean, on the politicians and stuff. We'll know if something real happens because, you know, there's only two countries in the world that are allowed to have commercials, advertisements for pills and healthcare stuff, and it's one of them is us. So unless we ban those commercials, I'm not believing anything I see. Well, hopefully, though, I liked RFK's health stuff in general. Not entirely, but in general, I kind of like his attitude towards it, and I'm cool with it, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, what I'm interested in as a larger possible theory, are we looking at the beginning of a new revolution, a French revolution of sorts? It's possible. Have people had enough of the billionaire class squeezing the middle class out of existence? And let me throw some numbers at you. If you go to Open Secrets, you can see that United Health has spent a ton of money on lobbying. In fact, out of 9,025 lobbyists, they rank 59 in terms of money spent. In 2023, they spent $10.7 million on lobbying. That's insane. In 2024, they spent $5.8 million. You're like, oh, they reduced it. Well, A, the year's not over yet, and B, that is interesting, because you'll notice if you look at the chart of their spending, if you go all the way back to 1998 on their expenditures for lobbying, you'll see an anomaly in 2023. It's clearly at least twice as high as the average. It kind of goes up linearly, you know, I'm sure with inflation or whatever, and in 2023, it's like it spikes. What happened in 2023? Well, we'll find out here in a second. But you can see which candidates and parties they lobbied. And I'm going to break it down for you. I'm going to give you numbers. Kamala Harris got $775,000. She was the highest lobbyist donor that there was. The Republican National Committee got $207,000. Donald Trump got $144,000. And the DNC got $103,000. So they spent more on the Democrats than the Republicans, but they spent on both. A lot of money, right? Hundreds of thousands of dollars. So the takeaway is a little hard to define, right? Why give money to both parties, you know? Well, it's because both parties are bought and sold, my friends. And maybe there's some politics as usual there, you know, because lots of lobbyists, if you look at all of the big industries, they spend money on both candidates because they feel like whoever gets in, they're going to owe them a favor. You know what I mean? So they throw part because they don't care. They don't care. They just want someone who's going to deregulate and let them do what they want to do. So if they can pay off this person or that person, they don't really care, because what they care about is money. All right. So in 2023, what happened? Well, if you look at the bill they spent the most lobbying on, you'll find a bill called S.2137, Preserving Access to Home Health Act of 2023. And I read the description of it. It says, as patients and families more and more often prefer their homes as the setting to receive health care, the Preserving Access to Home Health Act of 2023 aims to protect home health services for older adults and people with disabilities by preventing cuts to Medicare's home health benefit. All right. Then it goes on to detail how there are plans to cut this Medicare program, which will, of course, limit the access to home health care. So this bill, if this bill S.2137 passes, it will preserve that and it'll protect that ability for people to stay at home where they're comfortable, you know, allowing people on Medicare to stay at home instead of being forced into, I don't know, nursing homes or on the streets, or I don't know what the alternative is. I know there's plenty of people who, you know, when you go get a surgery, they kick you out of the hospital as fast as they possibly can. So I think it's actually cheaper to just stay at home and have like visiting nurses come in and check every day or two or whatever it is. I don't really know the details. But apparently there's talks about axing the program to save money. And you probably know where that comes from. So the DOJ, the Department of Justice, enters the chat. November 12th, 2024, less than a month ago, says from the justice.gov website, talks about United Healthcare being blocked from their acquisition of a home healthcare company called Amedisys. They were trying to acquire this company for $3.3 billion, but then it was blocked because the belief is that United Health was buying out their competition, creating a monopoly, which they've done a million times in the past. They've sucked up a million smaller insurance companies. It says here, the complaint filed in the District of Maryland alleges that the transaction would eliminate competition between United Health and Amedisys, the defendants, I guess. Since United Health's prior acquisition of Amedisys' home health and hospice rival LHC Group in 2023, defendants have been two of the largest home health and hospice providers in the United States. Eliminating the competition would harm patients who receive home health and hospice services, insurers who contract for home health services, and nurses who provide home health and hospice services. So why is United Health spending their lobbying money on this bill? And I don't know the answer. I don't know what they're doing with it. I would argue that they're probably in support of this bill because it'll ensure they can continue to get Medicare money for all their investments in the home healthcare business. Or maybe they're trying to suppress this bill and get it to not pass, because arguably if someone doesn't get Medicare to cover their home health services, now they got to come out of pocket. And Medicare has a history of lowering the costs from what I understand, and I'm not in the healthcare industry, by putting limits on what doctors can charge for stuff. Because I've talked to people who are in the healthcare, and they're like, look, we hate Medicare because it's like they tie our hands so tight, like we can't make a big profit off of it. And I get it. From a capitalist perspective, I get it. Like, you got to make money. You got to make profit. But the healthcare business is real shady. Yahoo says, because what I'm getting at here, to sum up, there's talk about cutting Medicare. It's clear as day. It's all over the news with the new administration. Yahoo says, cutting Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security was also floated earlier this year by House Speaker Mike Johnson, who promised to cut the programs in favor of boosting the country's military spending. In the infamous Conservative Manifesto Project 2025, which Trump and the GOP tried to distance themselves from until Trump's election victory, also includes drastic cuts to the popular programs. And if you look at the Project 2025, I think the title of it is something like A Mandate for the People or something. And you heard that language when Trump won. They said this is a mandate for change, which tells me that they're going to move forward with all of these plans that they've been talking about, right? So clearly they're going to cut Medicare and expenses for it. I don't know the details of what that entails. I'm just telling you what I'm reading. So it's possible that United Health sees the writing on the wall for all this, and they're trying to get involved with lobbying money. That's why they spent a ton on lobbying for that bill. And it could be why they put more money towards Kamala than Trump. Maybe they thought, well, Trump's going to cut Medicare and cut this home health, and we got all these investments in it. We need Kamala to get in there to prevent that. This is all my guessing, right? So, yeah. Anyway, and then if you read through Project 2025, I didn't read the whole thing, but I read some of it. It says that they think that Medicare and Medicaid, i.e. the Department of Health and Human Services, are the main drivers of our country's debt, $31 trillion. It says, quote, in essence, our deficit problem is a Medicare and Medicaid problem. And yes, the point I'm trying to make, okay, we have real-world effects on how our entire lives, how we die at home. You know, hospice at home is a nice option for people. And it's in the hands of lobbyists and mega corporations like United Health. I saw a chart on the internet claiming to show wealth distribution in France pre-revolution versus United States today. And it basically shows the top 10% owning half of the country's wealth. The implication being that that's what sparked this coup. It's because the people were so tired of seeing people get rich and them living in squalor that they started chopping off heads. So I went to Google AI and they told me that in France between 1760 and 1790, wealth distribution was highly skewed, with the top 10% of the population holding approximately 90% of the national wealth, while the remaining 90% of the population shared the rest. Extreme inequality. The wealthiest 1% possessed as much as 60% of the wealth, and this disparity significantly contributed to the outbreak of the French Revolution. Okay? So pre-revolution in France, top 10% owned 90% of the wealth. So I look up 2016, because that's the year it implied in the United States. In 2016, the top 10% of families in the United States owned 73% of the wealth. So we ain't too far off of there. Okay. And then I looked up 2024 to see if it's getting better or worse. It says the top 10% of earners held 67% of the wealth. So a little better. A little better. But still, we're talking roughly 70% versus the 90% which sparked the French Revolution. So, and then if you look at over time, for some reason, 1989 seemed to be the sort of oldest year I could find this information. It said the top 10% of Americans owned 56% of the wealth. So that's pretty bad that they've found a way to go from roughly 50% to roughly 70% in, what is that, 25, 35 years? Not good. Not a good trend. Not a good trend. And I firmly believe that we are in the middle of a squeeze. I believe this is clearly laid out in the Great Reset plans. The World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab. This is the richest corporations in the world. All of the elites go to these things. And the best thing we can do to combat this is to stay informed. We have to make sure that we don't get further down that what do you call it? We don't want to trend towards the 90-10 of the French Revolution. We're at like 70-30 right now, but it's trending that direction. We have to stop that. We have to make sure it goes back the other way. You know, power to the people, right? And I firmly believe that the billionaires are greedy and they're mentally ill. Obviously, not every single one of them, but most of them. And I think that the capitalism system, it promotes greed. And I think that things are going to get worse. I think you see billionaires owning the news and the social medias, and that's a lot of influence. So the best thing we can do is stay informed. And in fact, there's lots of pushback on this. And this is why I'm saying, like, maybe this shooting sparks some kind of revolution thought, because there's claims on Reddit now that an insurance company is requiring their employees to sign a pledge to never disparage their CEO. I don't know if that's true. It was on Reddit. In light of the shooting of the CEO. Blue Cross Blue Shield also in the news for having some kind of deal where they were apparently pushing a new rule that they were only going to pay X amount of minutes of anesthesia for people who go under anesthesia for surgeries, which would have in effect made surgeons rush a little bit more, which in effect would have killed people. The CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield, Kim Keck, had her name and face plastered all over the internet after Brian Thompson was murdered. And I've read that since this whole situation, Blue Cross has then walked back out of fear of retaliation. And this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. We gotta navigate in a way. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't like the idea of like doxing people and stuff. But I think to raise awareness of it and this is why I'm pro Second Amendment. This is why I'm pro Second Amendment. I don't like guns. I'm not a big gun guy. I think gun violence is terrible. I think there could be regulations on it that are acceptable for sure. But this is kind of the way you keep things in check. Unfortunately, I don't like to say it that way because I don't like the way that the violence happened in this particular case. But I don't know. It's an interesting philosophical debate is what I'm saying. Then there's another retaliation about from over billionaires that I haven't talked about this yet. This happened last week. There was a property up in the Hollywood Hills owned by a guy named William Rothschild, and it caught on fire. And William Rothschild, who was 87 years old, died inside the home. It's a very weird story because it turns out he wasn't a Rothschild at all. It wasn't his real name. I'm gonna play a clip. It's about 4 minutes. The ABC 7 Los Angeles report on this. But this guy, he was a hoarder, and he had dozens of the world's most expensive cars and expensive properties all over the place. And you're going to hear they investigate the guy and find out he's not really a Rothschild. And they talked to his brother in Oregon, and his brother was like, dude, this guy disappeared 40 years ago from my life, and he had no money. I don't understand. I don't know what he did, but take a listen because I got a theory.
But we begin with surprising new revelations about the man with the famous name who died in a mysterious Hollywood Hills house fire late last month. Neighbors believe he was a member of the Rothschild banking family and possibly a billionaire. But tonight, we've learned a lot more about the true identity of William de Rothschild and the hidden life he led for more than 40 years. Eyewitness News reporter Jory Rand joining us live now in the Hollywood Hills with those new revelations tonight. Jory.
That's right, Mark. The man who lived and died in this Laurel Canyon home was known to neighbors simply as Will Rothschild. They believed he was part of that famous family, but it turns out he was not, and his name originally was not Rothschild at all. It was Kaufman, and tonight we caught up with a family member in Oregon who had no idea he had been living here these last 40 years. 1 week after this Hollywood Hills home caught fire and a man known to neighbors as Will Rothschild, a billionaire member of the famed Rothschild family, was found dead inside, the picture of who this man really was is beginning to come into focus. It turns out 87-year-old William de Rothschild used to be William Kaufman of Oregon. The LA Times reporting he changed his name in the 80s.
Hi, is this Richard?
It is.
Hi, Richard. Sorry to bother you. This is Jory Rand calling from ABC 7 in Los Angeles.
Tonight, we reached out to Richard Kaufman, brother to William de Rothschild, who had no idea his brother was even alive.
I thought he had passed away 40 years ago. The last contact I had with him was a telephone call that was kind of odd. It seemed like he had something to tell me. Didn't, and when I never heard from him again, I kind of presumed that maybe he had an illness, didn't want to talk about it, and just quietly passed away.
He hadn't, and had been quietly living in Laurel Canyon, somehow living like a billionaire with multiple properties and dozens of luxury vehicles on elevators inside his garage.
Those I saw with my own eyes, so they're there.
So where did the money come from?
Your guess is as good as mine.
His brother was equally baffled.
But I don't know how he made his money.
And neither friend nor family really knew who this person who had lived as William Kaufman and Will de Rothschild really was.
I was trying to decide whether I should be sad about this, but in reality, I'm somewhat happy about it, that he had a life, even though it might have been somewhat bizarre, that he lived a long life, did not pass away in his 40s.
He was a kind, gentle soul, and as far as he goes, there's no deception on his part. Absolutely not. He was nice to everyone. He never had a bad word to say about anyone, and was a good neighbor. I consider him a good friend, and I'm really sorry that he's gone.
So it was really important to neighbors here to let everyone know that Will was not posing as a member of the famous family. He never said that he was, but the lifestyle and the name could have led people to use their imagination to connect the dots, but he certainly had that lifestyle as to where the money came from. So we had an inkling when we came here a week ago and the Hummer parked in the driveway was registered to a Margot Merkin. She is the heiress to the budget rent-a-car fortune. She lives in the home up the street. The LA Times reporting that the two are married, though to neighbors here, they just assumed she was a cousin who he would go and visit. He lived here in this much smaller, run-down house. There is a much larger, much fancier home up the hill. They both apparently belong to Merkin. That could be where the money came from. But again, we're waiting to figure that out. We're also waiting to hear from the coroner for official cause of death.
Now, what's really odd here is that nobody knows how this guy's got this insane amount of money, and he lived up on Lookout Mountain, which, if you remember, we interviewed Jay Widener and Ryder Lee for their Clockwork Shining Kubrick's Odyssey 3 documentary, which you probably watched by now. But in the documentary, you're going to hear about MK Ultra, Hollywood, and a place called Lookout Mountain, which was a propaganda film location, which allegedly the whole 60s movement of LSD and drugs and expanding the mind and MK Ultra came right from there. So interesting stuff there. I'm going to take a venture that William Rothschild was maybe, I don't know, part of some kind of intelligence spy ring. It's strange. It's the strangest story that no one's talking about. But to sum this all up, the Great Reset stuff. They tell us you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, which is why the middle class is being decimated. You know, being decimated. It's strange to me where, you know, I don't know what the minimum wage should be to live. Seems like it'd be maybe around $20 or something like that, because of how much everything costs, at least, right? It seems like it. And it's funny because you'll have an 18-year-old barely graduated out of high school that can make that kind of money at Target or In-N-Out Burger or whatever, right? Which is fine. I'm okay with that. But then you got these old dudes like me, you know? And, you know, master's degree and all this work experience. And I saw, like, no raises over the last few years, which tells me they're pushing this middle class into a narrow band of pay, you know, like this, what is it, like $20 to $40 an hour, right? Which is like barely enough to sort of make things happen. And then meanwhile, the billionaires keep accumulating more and more, you know? Like if you look at the CEO pay versus the average worker pay since 1980, the CEO pay went up maybe 2,000%. And the average worker pay was I don't remember what it was, 40%, 50%, something like that. This is all part of the trickle-down economics thing. Give the money to the elites and they'll make jobs and all these great things happen, right? And I'm not an economist. I don't know how that really works. Sounds like a bunch of bullshit to me. And if you look at the facts of how the wealth is being accumulated at the top, it tells me that's not really working. When people can't afford to own a home or rent or buy groceries and they're working two jobs, that doesn't seem right. And why do they want this? They want us to live in poverty. And the way I look at it is because they're evil, they're greedy, and ultimately they have a plan for us. They're all on board because they got a secret little plan. Aleister Crowley said, "The slave shall serve," and that's going to be us. One day, when we're living in absolute squalor, and it's going to be like a cyberpunk movie of dystopia, high tech, low life. That it's going to be us, a dirty, nasty, grimy existence, coffin apartments. And the elites who live up in the ivory towers are going to say, "We got a plan for you guys. We're going to strap this Neuralink cap to your brain, and you can live just like us. It's going to be a simulation, but you're not going to be able to tell the difference." Isn't that better? Isn't that a better existence? And they're going to be right. That's the kicker. They're going to be right. And we're going to have to make that choice. And it's not really going to be a choice. You're going to have to do it. So there you go. I know it's a dark ending. Ooh, sorry. but yeah, that's an interesting story going on with this whole thing. It seems like, the First World War was started over an assassination. Plus you got Cliff Eye's prediction of some major event. Maybe it all lines up. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what 2025 brings, shall we? But thank you very much. And look, let me try to end it on a more positive note for you. If you're worried about all this stuff, you're worried about the future, you're worried about your kids, as you should be, none of this should change anything. From a spiritual perspective, continue down your path of loving your neighbor, trying to be connected to God, trying to be more peaceful in whatever manner you desire. Or maybe you're an atheist and you're just like, "I don't care, I'll turn into space dust." You're still going to turn into space dust. Don't worry about it. It's fine. So there you go. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. This is the December bonus episode. I give you guys a bonus episode every month because I love you dearly and you make this podcast happen, honestly. And for the Twin Peaks updates, I uploaded a few Twin Peaks episodes. I think I talked about this already at the beginning. I dropped season 3, parts 6, 7, 8. And soon I'm going to drop a Kenneth Grant Outside the Circles of Time book review. Everyone, that's required listening for everybody. It doesn't really, if you didn't follow Twin Peaks, it doesn't matter. You're still going to want to hear this episode. It doesn't really play a significant role. I'll mention Twin Peaks a couple times in the show, but it's not in that episode, but it doesn't really matter. And then in January, February, I'm gonna bust out the rest of them. We're talking about season 3, parts 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. The final dossier and a final recap. I'm going to do all that in January, February. So when you see a slew of Twin Peaks episodes come across your feed, if you're not into it, just ignore and press on with your day. You're still getting a bonus episode every month. That's not Twin Peaks. And then after February, I'll have a little more free time and sanity. I'll try to give you guys some more good shows, okay? So thanks for subscribing to the show. Thanks for supporting it. Until next time, stay positive.